You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network with your host, Dan Gould. Virginia History with Rick Britton starts right now. Local historian and cartographer Rick Britton has been a good friend of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network for many years. He joins us in studio today for the start of an exciting new series on Virginia's colorful history. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, you're doing well. Survived the earthquake, I see.
Survived the earthquake, and now we're awaiting Hurricane Irene. But you've got a great earthquake story. What was it that happened in the house?
Well, we've been doing some renovation at home, and just 2 hours prior to the earthquake, we had this huge load of lumber delivered to the house, and the lumber has to be inside so it can get acclimatized to the setting, to the inside of the house. And altogether weighs about 2 tons, and it's sitting in the middle of our living room floor.
That's a lot of lumber.
It is. Yeah. It is. So my wife and I were in the back of the house when the earthquake started, and I thought it sounded exactly like that ton of lumber just was crashing through the floor landing in the room below it. And I just instantly got this picture in my mind of this humongous big hole in the middle of the living room.
But what a horror that would be.
It was frightening. And I said to Beth, of course I had to share this with my wife. I said to her, you know, that sounds like the lumber just fell through the living room floor. Sure, she didn't appreciate that. But anyway, then the earthquake went on for too long, and
you realized it was an earthquake and not the lumber.
And not the lumber.
Right.
Yeah. So where were you when the earthquake struck?
I was at work out in my office. I have a little office behind the house. It's kind of uphill in the pines. It's all of about 15 steps from the kitchen. That's my daily commute, about 15 steps. And I was back there, and at first it sounded like there was a large truck going by. But then, as you said, it went on for too long. So I ran out of the office just to catch my wife running out of the kitchen, you know, and both of us going, what the heck is that? But I actually remember in the mid-80s, there was an earthquake in downtown that hit downtown Charlottesville. It wasn't as long as this one, but again, I thought it was a loud truck going by, a really heavy truck, and then as it continued on, you know, I realized it wasn't.
You know, the thing that catches you off guard living here in Charlottesville is that earthquakes are so rare, it's hard to remember what to do. And for a moment, we couldn't remember whether we should run to the basement and hide under something.
A lot of people are saying that. Stay inside, run outside. What do you do? Yeah.
The answer is run outside, but
okay.
When you have 10 seconds to decide. Anyway, so we got that behind us. Now we're bracing for Hurricane Irene.
Right. I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Here in Central Virginia.
Yeah, anyway. It sounds like it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to recently?
Oh, man, I've been keeping really busy. Mostly lately, over the past few weeks, I've been illustrating maps. So I've done maps for two books put out by people working at Monticello, the mountaintop home of our third president, Thomas Jefferson. So I did maps for a book about his gardens and orchards. And I did maps for a diary that's being published by Massachusetts Historical Society, a diary that was kept of one of his granddaughters, Ellen Coolidge, when she was visiting London in 1838, 1839. So a really detailed map of downtown London over a two-page spread. That was a lot of fun.
So what do you use for a resource when you're working on these maps? I mean, where do you get the historical resources that you need to...
That's a great question. Usually the customers who are really good, the customers I like, they send me the stuff. They do the research ahead of time, and they'll show me a number of maps, and they'll say, we like the way the roads are shown on this, or we like the way the rivers are done over here, so we want you to combine those two elements onto one. This information is correct on this one. This information is incorrect on this one, so we want you to fix all of that. So usually they provide me with the base maps. Sometimes, however, like there's a gentleman now, I'm doing some maps on World War II. I'm just starting out on the Market Garden campaign. And he sent me the names of the books, and I have to go out and actually get the books out of the library to use the maps. Those will be my base maps out of books that have already been published.
And what, you know, what makes a fax test historically significant? I mean, do you find it, are you like a reporter? Do you need multiple sources to convince yourself that a fact is really historically significant?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's a lot easier the more modern a map is. So like, for example, the maps of World War II, of Western Europe, most every map is going to be pretty accurate. But of course, as you go further back in history, then yes, I do need a lot of sources to confirm this road was here, this river went this way. Yeah. As you get further back, it's tougher.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're doing quite a lot of work. You're running your tour series again this year.
Yeah. We got a tour series just earlier this week, on Sunday. I took some folks, down to Richmond. We've got one series that's going, that's called, Historic Cemeteries of Virginia. So we went down and we saw the Poe Museum, and then we saw St. John's Church, and the graveyard around that. And the connection is that Poe's mother, Elizabeth Arnold, is actually buried in the graveyard at St. John's.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then on Wednesday, we went out into the Shenandoah Valley and saw the battlefields at Cross Keys and Port Republic. And that's part of the Civil War Lecture and Day Trip series that's
right.
also going. Yeah.
And that's in progress now.
That's right. In progress now.
That's
yeah.
right. And our listeners, our regular listeners, can catch those lectures right here in the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, I understand you've got some big plans in the fall, right? You've got a trip to, you've got a 3-day trip coming up to Gettysburg.
We do. Thanks for asking. Yeah. Toward the end of Gettysburg, we're going to take the folks up there and an entire busload from Charlottesville, and we're going to spend 2 nights, in about 2.5 days. The first day really is going to be a travel day and kind of easy in the evening, but the next day, the second day that we're there, we're going to visit the battlefield of the first day in the morning, and the battlefield of the second day in the afternoon. And then the morning of the third day, we're going to walk Pickett's Charge, which folks, especially Virginians, and I'm a Virginian, it's kind of neat to do.
And is there still space in that tour available?
There is.
And how do people get in on this if they want to?
That's a fantastic question. Thanks for asking. They can call the great folks down at the Senior Center Travel Office at 434-974-6538.
Right.
Yeah. And also, there's information is up on their website, and it's www.seniorcenterinc.org.
Okay, great. And more specifically, you have a series coming up, a continuation of your last series from last year, Virginia History 101. You're going to have a sequel this year, starting in September, right?
It does. It starts on Thursday, September 8th. It's a number of seven consecutive Thursdays, and it's called Virginia History 201, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, A Dynasty of Friends. So it's all about these three friends who controlled the White House for 24 consecutive years, all three of them, of course, living in and around Charlottesville, Virginia, our third, our fourth, and our fifth presidents.
That'll be great.
And it's going to be fantastic.
And I understand you brought a little teaser for that series that you're going to share with us later in this podcast.
Later in this podcast, I'm the first speaker, and so what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste of it by starting off the talk on James Monroe at the Battle of Trenton, New Jersey. He was a bona fide hero of the American Revolution.
Great. That sounds just fantastic.
Thanks.
And I guess I should also say that we will be covering that. The Charlottesville Podcasting Network will be replaying that lecture series later on this year.
You know, one thing I should mention about that lecture series, thanks for bringing it up, is I'm the first speaker, but I'm just going to host the others, and we've got some great speakers. We have the senior editor at the papers of Thomas Jefferson Retirement Series, and he's talking about Jefferson through the eyes of his family. His name is Jeff Looney. Beth Taylor, who is a slavery expert and has actually taught slavery at Monticello and Montpelier, the home of James and Dolly Madison. She's speaking on presidential plantation slavery. The senior editor of the papers of James Madison, John Stagg, is going to compare the Jefferson administration with the James Madison administration that followed immediately afterwards. A historical interpreter out at Montpelier, Meg Kennedy, will be talking about Dolly Madison. And then, surprise, surprise, and this is going to be a great thing for you to podcast, we're actually going to meet fifth President James Monroe in the flesh.
I won't ask how you arranged that. I didn't know that we had time travel available to us. that's great.
Yeah,
that's
fantastic. Great. It's a guy by the name of Dennis Bigelow. Uh-huh. He's a New York trained actor. Uh-huh. And when he walks into the room in the garb and in the attitude of our fifth president, he is really unbelievable. It's something that just has to be heard and seen.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And this is a paid series, right? It's a four fee series. So again, make the arrangements through the Senior Center.
That's right. It's through the travel office at the Senior Center, 434-974-6538.
Right, and there's no tour associated with this series.
Actually, there is.
Oh, there is.
There's a trip at the end, and we've got a special behind-the-scenes tour of Montpelier, a tour that they can't get, the regular visitors can't get on their own, a special behind-the-scenes tour. And then we're also going to see the James Madison Museum there in Orange, right nearby Montpelier. So it's going to be a full day devoted to James and Dolly Madison.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
All right. So in the remaining time we have today, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we're going to do in this series in Virginia history with Rick Britton. And I see you've brought a little list of topics that we can kind of work through.
Okay. What we're planning on doing in this series is we're going to start off by talking about the Civil War. And on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, Coy Barefoot and I, on his radio show, went through a list of the 25 most important Civil War battles that took place in Virginia. And we did it consecutively. And it seems like it took us the entire Civil War to get through those 25. It turned out to be really popular. A lot of people listened in. A lot of folks downloaded. So the idea that you and I came up with together on this one, Dan, is to do kind of a companion series. And that is to talk about a lot of the other different topics, the kinds of things that people don't usually hear about. So some of the ideas are some of the big ones, for example, the three branches of the army, infantry, cavalry, and artillery, how they were organized, how they were officered, how they were led in battle, their importance, their relative importance, and how they cooperated in campaign and also on the field of battle. The ancillary branches that are so important, but hardly anybody knows anything about, and nobody talks about the engineers, the pontoniers, the quartermaster, the commissary officers, the guys who are actually rounding up the food for the men. Camping, what camping was like, the different uniforms. The Civil War was famous for its variety of uniforms, the various kinds of equipment, and we'll probably do that based on the three branches, so infantry equipment, cavalry equipment, artillery equipment. The weaponry, the Civil War was famous for all kinds of new, innovative weaponry. Lots of people like to think of the Civil War as the last of the old wars, the last Napoleonic War, but actually also the first brand new war, the first modern war. So we'll talk about that. There was all kinds of new types of artillery. Women in the ranks, surprise, surprise, they weren't supposed to be there, but it happened anyway. African-American troops, Native American troops, and a lot of people haven't heard about this, Hispanic American troops in the ranks, fortifications, field works, breastworks, trenches, lines of supply, raiders, rangers, guerrillas, railroads in the Civil War. It just goes on and on, ad infinitum.
I think we got our work cut out.
And this might take another Civil War, another 4 years to get through all of this. And, you know, since we're talking about this, let's encourage the folks, since there is a comment section below this where you just downloaded, let's encourage folks to give us comments, but also give us ideas and requests for Civil War topics like these that they want us to talk about.
Yeah, that would be excellent. We'd love to get that kind of feedback. So
we absolutely
please,
do.
Listeners, take Rick's advice and comment and put your comments right below where you've listened to this podcast.
One time last year, you know, or a couple of years ago, we had a series that you podcast that was called Characters of Central Virginia, and we did three or four of the, oh my gosh, there must have been 12 of them.
We did Anastasia and
That gentleman, Technical Sergeant Frank Dabney Paragoy.
Yes.
And we got contacted. We ended up being contacted by a distant relative of Frank Dabney Paragoy in North Carolina, who had downloaded it, and he and his dad had listened to it, and we got the nicest comments from them about that. So we know folks are out there listening.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Great. All right. So we're getting a little short of time here. So let's go. Let's move on to the little teaser that you brought us. Now, again, this is. Is it the introduction or is it a synopsis of the first lecture?
You know, one of the reasons we call these things, I call these things teasers, is because I have a way of starting off my stories with an action lead. And so this is an action lead that puts you right in to the middle of the Battle of Trenton. So this is the first few paragraphs of the talk that I'll be giving on September 8th.
And this is lecture one in the new series called Virginia History 201.
Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, A Dynasty of Friends. And the name of this talk specifically is James Monroe, Bonafide Hero of the American Revolution. After firing off a few ineffectual shots, the Hessian pickets turned tail and bolted south into the small town of Trenton, New Jersey, loudly spreading the alarm. Immediately on their heels, at the long trot, despite driving sleet that cut like a knife, stormed the ragged American advance party. The fast-moving Virginians, a company of the 3rd Regiment under Captain William Washington and his young lieutenant, quickly took up a position on a small hillock at the V intersection of King and Queen Streets. They sent a shower of lead whistling after their enemies. Trenton, that early morning of December 26, 1776, was little more than several dozen houses lining the two main parallel streets, King and Queen, which ran south from their intersection for a few hundred yards until reaching Assapink Creek. It was General George Washington's determination to destroy the village's Hessian garrison. To do so, he needed to eject the enemy force from it. Responding to the picket firing, half-awake German grenadiers of the Rahl Regiment stumbled out of their quarters in the town and attempted to form ranks on King Street. Officers shouted at them to ignore the abysmal weather and get into position. Well-trained in traditional European warfare, the mercenaries were startled by the rapid approach of the American rabble and their wild appearance. Their assailants were filthy, barely covered in tattered uniforms, and amazingly, in defiance of the season, some were barefoot. Reddened snow marked their aggressive steps. The Virginians surged forward, firing as they came. Crouching behind the cover of a 10-yard fence, Washington and his youthful lieutenant directed their riflemen to volley into the despised Hessians. Several dark blue-coated Germans, fumbling with their dampened firelocks, screamed and tumbled into the snow. In return, the scattered enemy musketry flew high, whizzing over the Virginians. As they continued forward, reaching for their hatchets and long knives, Captain Washington fell wounded, hit in both hands, and command of the company devolved on his young lieutenant, 18-year-old James Monroe, future president of the United States. He shouted for his men to take the cannon, reminding them of General Washington's countersign for the engagement, victory or death.
Wow. That's exciting.
I hope so.
All right. All right. And just one last time, the first lecture in this new series, Virginia History 201, mm-hmm. September the 8th.
September the 8th, 6 p.m. at the Charlottesville Senior Center. And for more information, they can call 434-974-6538.
Now, do they have to make the arrangements for payment ahead of time, or can that just be done on the night?
They can actually come and pay on the night. We would prefer if they call ahead of time, though, because sometimes we get filled up.
I see.
So we'd like to know ahead of time.
All right. And you'll be joining us again 2 weeks from today for more of Virginia's colorful history.
Right. That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Join us each second and fourth Sunday for Virginia History with Rick Britton. For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.